I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, November 30th, 2019, and this is episode 43 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So this week's best thing was probably, I'm going to go with Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. I finally read that book. I started it on the audiobook, and I really loved it. The way I listen to audiobooks is usually, especially with fantasy, because I miss out on how the names are spelled and how things are spelled when you're just hearing it on audio. So inevitably, about a third of the way through, I'll just buy the Kindle and use the syncing between the audiobook and the Kindle version. And then on my phone, in the Kindle app, be listening and reading at the same time if I can. Or if I'm doing things, then I'll read and I'll go back and forth between reading while I'm listening and then just listening. And then sometimes if I'm in a hurry, just reading, because I, you know, read faster. Because I traditionally listen to more audiobooks on nonfiction. And when I don't do that, actually. I just listen to the whole thing like it's a podcast or, you know, something. But with fiction, I find that I have been actually buying the Kindle book, which usually there's some kind of discount, but still you end up spending so much more money. But I only do that because it's a book that I really enjoy. There are fiction books when I just listen to them, and that's fine. But I remember I did it with The Fifth Season and with the Six of Crows. And so I'd heard a lot about the book. I had read Leigh Bardugo's first book when it first came out, and it was fine. Like, it was cool, but I wasn't like enthralled, and I didn't even finish that trilogy. I might go back and read it again. But this, I really, really enjoyed. And so it's a heist, it's a fantasy heist novel. And I've been wanting to write a heist novel, and it got me re-energized for this, not even an idea. Like, the idea is 1920s fantasy heist. That's it. That's all I have. I don't have characters. I don't have anything else. But it's been on my mind for a while. It's been sort of just percolating. And I feel like it's getting more energy behind it. So we'll see. So yes, I really enjoyed that. And I will be probably watching the TV show. She's got a TV show that once I finish the book and just kind of was in it and wanted to learn more about it, I realized that the show is going to be both Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows, which is interesting. So she's got a whole world that she has created. A lot of her different series are in the same world at different periods of time, or around like a similar period of time, not like 20, 30 years, apparently. But, and I like that idea. And I have a similar thing going, even though mine is like more of a multiverse. But, and like Brandon Sanderson has a universe. There's a lot of authors do this. And I think it's a really, you know, I'm really drawn to that. And so, yeah, we'll see how the TV show shapes up when it comes out probably next year, I think. The other thing, which I saw, and I enjoyed a lot, but it has a lot more weight to it, I guess. The movie Queen and Slim, which came out, I guess, this week. And we saw it last night. And it is a very, it's kind of hard to describe. I really did enjoy it. And it's actually stayed with me more than even enjoying it. It's like a movie that I'm still thinking about. And I feel like I will be thinking about for a long time. So if you haven't seen the trailers, it's a black couple are on their first date. And as they're driving home, they get pulled over by the cops. And through the situation happens that they end up shooting and killing the cop and then going on the run. Now, the theater that I was in, it was full of mostly black people. And the way it goes down, when they kill that cop, the theater breaks out into applause, you know. And it's just as a fraught film, but it's also full of, it's like every emotion is sort of portrayed in this. You've got that fear and that tension that takes you all the way through because you're like, you have no idea what's going to happen at the end. It does that really well. It builds that tension, but there's also, it's a love story, and there's lots of like hope and joy and then pain and fear and anger. And it just sort of encapsulates in one movie, like the black experience in America, with all of the highs and lows. And that's really what they were trying to do. And I think they did that. I mean, I think the film has some issues. There's a lot of I mean, it's definitely flawed, you know, but it's so worth seeing. And it was so powerful. At the end, I left wondering, okay, so what is their worldview? You know, what are they trying to say with this film? And I can't, you know, presume to know necessarily. Like, you leave with a lot of emotions and a lot of questions and a lot of, and wanting to think about what you've seen, but you don't leave, at least I didn't leave with like a clear message. And maybe that's not what they were going for. But it was very interesting. It's very artsy. You know, it's a little bit meandering, but it still has enough forward momentum that I think that most people can enjoy it. Like, it's not like an art film where it's like you have to be in a certain, you know, either in a certain mood or a certain mindset to appreciate. I remember I took my husband to see a Jim Jarmusch film, The Limits of Control, and he has not forgiven me for that. Extremely indie, extremely artsy. Artsy to the point where there's only like the same, different characters repeat the same dialogue over and over and over again. It's that kind of artsy where I don't know what he was doing. But, you know, being a former film student, I can appreciate artsy stuff. My husband, not so much. So yeah, not like that. But yeah, I definitely recommend seeing that. Yeah, worth checking out. So my writing update. I had a much better week this week. I feel like I'm back on track, finally, after a few weeks of being meandering in the woods. I realized what the novella was missing. And it's something that I talked about earlier in the podcast. There's a whole episode called Blood on the Page. And I did. I realized that there was not enough blood on the page. And I also did an interview, a podcast episode for the KT Literary Podcast, which is my agency. And Renee, who's an agent there and she does the podcast, she was asking me about this idea of blood on the page. And I was like, yeah, that it was just happening this week again, where I was looking at it and I was feeling so lackluster about the story and I couldn't quite pinpoint why I was feeling bad. And I was like, well, I'll just print it out and read what I have so far again and just try to re-engage with it. And I was like, oh, there's not enough blood on the page. There's not enough of that, like, soul, you know, emotion for the characters. They're doing things and it's like hitting technical points of storytelling, hitting the five commandments of storytelling from the story grid. But I'm not feeling anything when I'm reading this. And so that led me back to the characters. And since I had originally written this story 3 years ago, I had forgotten that I had already done a lot of character work. And so I had a spreadsheet and I opened it and I was like, oh, look at that. There's all this stuff there. And so I just kind of reconnected with their goals and their wounds and did some more worksheets and then got back into it. And it just felt better. You know, it felt better being really grounded, trying to go back and deepen the POVs of the scenes that I had written before. And it didn't take a lot of work. And I went through everything one more time. And then now I can move forward. And so that was a good reminder for me. Like, there's these things that I know, you know, that I know when I get stuck, it's probably one of these things. But inevitably, you get stuck and you forget. And then I kind of have to run through all of the different algorithms that I have for, all right, let's try this, let's try plot, let's try character, let's try this, until I happen upon the right one for that particular situation. So yeah, things are definitely going better. I'm feeling more positive. Like, I've got the energy back for the story. And there's some things I still don't know, but moving ahead. And that always feels really good. I haven't really done a NaNoWriMo update. I was trying to do this like NaNoWriMo, what is called a Rebel NaNoWriMo, and revise. And of course that fell apart completely, revising 50,000 words in the month. I stopped keeping a track of the word count because it just wasn't hitting that in any way. So that was a bust. And I think I really enjoy doing NaNoWriMo when I'm doing it the way it is, like 50,000 new words, fast drafting, new story. And I don't know when I'll be able to get to that again. Like, we'll see what happens next year, what phase of what project that I'm in, if I can do it again. I do still have many years of NaNoWriMo's that need to be revised that I haven't gotten to yet. So, But like I said, I have a new idea. And once I'm finished with Earthsinger Chronicles, so in April, essentially, well, as of April, I'll be done with the contracted books. I'll still have another novella that I'm going to self-publish that hasn't, I have a first draft of it. And so that will come out between books 3 and 4. So I won't completely be done next spring, but I will still be looking for the next thing to write. And now that I have this new idea that seems like it has a lot of energy, it'll be like, oh, what do I want to do? Because I have several other things that I thought was going to be next. And I really I'm going to have to evaluate that. And that's months away, 6 months away at this point. But I'm really still thinking about it a lot. Another thing that Sherman is adjusting his bed. We're just going to power through that. So another thing that I've been doing and feeling better about this week is pantsing with parameters. So I still have, you know, new scenes to write because there was a chunk of the novella missing also in my first draft. It's always a chunk of everything. Like, fast drafting is great, but it inevitably, there are large sections that I have to rewrite or write from scratch when I've just gotten to the end and discovered that, oh, I need this thing. So I talked about pantsing last week. This week, I was doing more of plotting the scene out just with the the commandments of storytelling, the desire, the inciting incident, the progressive complications, turning point, crisis, climax, and resolution of the scene. Just making bullet pointing those lists and then going into the writing. So I guess I feel like that's still pantsing because within that it changes and those are just the box that I build around myself to be able to write it. But yeah, that's been going well. So pantsing and then coming back the next day, revising and moving forward that way. So that's kind of how I'm getting through the new stuff and working on hitting this deadline. Thanksgiving went really well. I had a great time. We were at my mom's house. I cooked a bunch of things. Well, I cooked technically two things, but I brought a bunch of things. And we had a great time. We played, I don't know what this game is called. It's a thing that she had on her iPad. It's kind of like Taboo, where you hold the iPad up to your forehead and there's a word or phrase there and your team has to get you to guess what's there without saying the word there. There's a name for this game and I don't know what it is. And it was a very lively round of that game. Like, my family gets into it. We usually do game nights on Thanksgiving. And since it was a smaller crowd than usual, it was still a lot of fun. I've heard someone talking about like whether Thanksgiving was something we should still celebrate, given, you know, the history and like the lies that were taught about the origins of Thanksgiving. I think back to that in like elementary school, you know, with the Pilgrims and the Indians and how they came together and had this wonderful feast to celebrate them being here. And you learn that in school. And then as an adult, you're like, oh, wait, that's not true at all. Why do they teach us that? You know, like, why do they teach us all this false history? Do the teachers, I assume that the teachers who are teaching it don't know that it's false, or who were teaching it. I don't know what they teach now in school to kids, but, or do they just try to sanitize it for children? Like, is that what's happening? Anyway, I'd heard someone talking about, was it a holiday we should celebrate? And I think you can separate, you know, the false narrative of the creation of the holiday from what it's supposed to do, like from the idea of being grateful and giving thanks and having a family holiday that you can celebrate with the people that you care about. Those are, you know, two separate things. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, we shouldn't celebrate Kwanzaa because it's a made up holiday. I'm like, at some point, all holidays are made up. And not that I've ever successfully gotten my family to celebrate Kwanzaa. Like, I would be down, but no one else is. So I've given up. But I don't think that it being a made-up holiday, you know, completely invented in the 70s, it invalidates it. Like, if you think about Black culture, like, we had to create a lot of whole cloth everything. So it makes perfect sense that we would create a holiday because we had to, you know, everything was stripped away and we took pieces of other things and created a whole culture. And that culture fuels the world right now. Like, everybody is trying to be a part of Black culture. So that is at some point invented. So yeah, I don't know what my point was, but I, gratitude is you know, extremely important for our well-being. And it's always something that I have to remind myself of. I was thinking about this because I was thinking a lot about professional jealousy, and especially in the author world. I've seen, no lie, this week, three times in different articles and places, the quote that comparison is the thief of joy. And that has so much to do with professional jealousy. And it's something that I struggle with a lot. And I think that most of us struggle with jealousy to some degree. You know, you'll see big news coming out from someone, whether it's someone you know or someone you don't know, if it's someone you think is deserving or undeserving, like they've gotten a huge, you know, 6-7-figure book deal or a movie deal or the movie's coming out. You know, you see this news, and there is a lot of jealousy wrapped up in, I think, in creative endeavors in general. And it's definitely something that I struggle with, to be perfectly honest. You know, I think I've been thinking of like, okay, how can I better deal with this? I just feel like it's a natural human reaction to some degree, but I can work on mitigating it, you know? And I know that no matter where you are, whatever level of career you're at, there's someone doing better than you and someone doing worse than you. So I know that there are people, like I feel viscerally, like sometimes you walk into certain rooms and you know that there are people who are jealous of you and what you've achieved. And, you know, however much people think that I've achieved, there's obviously people doing way, way better. And, you know, you're seeing these cool things happening and you're like, oh, why can't that happen to me? And to a certain degree, jealousy is based on a scarcity mindset, which I don't have. Like there's enough readers for everyone. There's enough moviegoers for everyone. That's not the issue, but with the gatekeepers, you know, that's where the scarcity comes in. Everybody's not going to be chosen for this. And this person gets plucked out of obscurity, or this person gets this and that. And, you know, part of it is, yes, you want it to happen to you. And part of it is you feel like maybe you deserve good things to happen to you, or you just have dreams that you want to make true and that require someone else choosing you. You know, some things don't and some things do. You know, like you can self-publish and no one has to choose you except for the readers. So I guess someone does still have to choose you. Readers do have to choose you, because you can self-publish in obscurity forever, and you can spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on ads, and it may or may not work. The readers may or may not choose you. Publishers may or may not choose you. Filmmakers may or may not. So there's always something that you can want that requires a selection process, you know? And so that is the scarcity, I guess. I was always raised to think that if someone is doing it, if there's anybody in the world doing something, that person could be you. You know, there's no reason why that person couldn't be you. In trying to battle and overcome professional jealousy, reminding myself of that, like, there's no reason why at some point in the future that couldn't be me. The feeling of jealousy has no point. You know, it's not helping me. It's not helping me achieve my dreams. It's not helping me get where I want to go. So it's useless and makes you feel bad. Like all of these things, like I know, I know them all. It doesn't stop you from feeling it in that moment. So what I'm working on is to, in that moment, change it, turn it around, and not allow it to fester even for a few moments. And I think that gratitude is probably the best way to do that, you know? To remind yourself of the things that you have achieved and the things that you have done, and all of the goals that you've accomplished. You know, like I have it tattooed on my chest, so be it, see to it, for making things happen and getting to where I am now. And so that's just something that's kind of a constant thing that I struggle with, and I'm always looking for ways to help myself through it and to just reduce it, you know, in my life as much as possible. In other news, I am in physical therapy for my wrist and my thumb, and it's going pretty well. Physical therapists are like magicians, sort of. You know, like I went in for the first appointment, and she's feeling my thumb and moving things around and going, wow, look at that. Like feeling things that I have no idea what she's feeling. It's like little tiny joint movements. And she's like, tells her something. And so apparently my thumb and my wrist is really because of my forearm and possibly my shoulder, because I'd forgotten that I'd hurt my shoulder last year, around October, rock climbing, of course. And it wasn't a terrible thing. It was just something that was very sore and in pain for, like, still, right, you know, till now. Basically a year later, it's still kind of sore and painful. But there's more weakness in my shoulder and my lats, and then that could have affected all the way down to my wrist and to my thumb. So learning all kinds of things about my own body. So yeah, I'll probably be in physical therapy a few more weeks, and then, I don't know, they told me not to climb. Like, could you possibly hold off on the climbing? And I was like, I haven't been doing it for months, but yes, I can stop. I'll just do what they tell me to do, and hopefully it will work, and then I will have much better things to talk about my climbing one day in the future. So my goals for the upcoming week, I am proposing some panels for the RWA National Conference next year. To get those in, they are due December 2nd. And so that's one of the things I'll be doing today. I never did get my newsletter sent this week, so there was no newsletter for November. I will send one in December. Sometimes things just, it was on my list of things to do, like literally every day, and it fell off the list because I didn't, I don't know. And it's not like it's a hard thing to do. Write the newsletter. It'll take about an hour and a half for me, you know, usually to send a newsletter every month. I just did not do it. So regroup, get that out at some point. Keep with the writing, still working on the novella and book 4 of Earthsinger Chronicles, and keep writing, keep working, try to fit in like mental breaks in between, which is what the reading is. Usually at the end of my workday, I will, that's when I do read. And even if I'm not reading as much as I would like to, I still make sure to make time for it because it is important to me. Like, you know, you hear writers say, I don't have time to read. And I'm like, it just couldn't be me. I couldn't do this without having that constant stream of story. Like, more than just filling the well, it's also how I relax and how I get away from it and take mental breaks. And so there's no such thing as being too busy to read in my world. It might be for a week or two, but then I'll have that itch and I'll have to go back and pick something up, even if it's a short story or a novella. And there's a book that's calling me. I have to get my work done first, and then I will go and do some relaxing and reading. If you're on the video feed, Sterling has joined us. My cat is right here. He, because I'm recording this a little later, it's early afternoon, he is awake. And because usually, yes, it's his morning constitutional. He's still sleeping in the morning when I record. So I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving week and that you have a great week coming up. I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review on your podcast app to help others find it. My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, check out frolic.media/podcasts.